thank you for your time. I can't imagine how unbelievably swamped you are at the moment.
That's just been the case, though, for, well, arguably 20 years, but especially the last 15 months. So it's all good.
I mean, pretty much at this point, you are the most ubiquitous Jewish Australian journalist to be thrust in front of the camera.
For better or worse, my friend, for better or worse, but yes.
How do you see in this period, like, I mean, you're often asked to evaluate like a myriad positions, but the one that to me seems glaringly absent from being asked from ostensibly all your colleagues is the utter silence in regards to the Israeli seemingly doctrine of targeting and eliminating journalists. Like, and what sort of precedent does that set for, I guess, warfare in general, and I mean reporting standards, and I mean, what does the future look like if that can be allowed to happen and has been?
Look, it's incredibly, incredibly dangerous, and I think what a lot of people are not aware of, because so much of the media has obfuscated this or simply ignored it or played it down in the last 15 or so months, particularly in the war in Gaza, but certainly Lebanon and beyond, is that Israel has killed more journalists in Gaza than any other conflict in recorded history. Now, I'm not saying other governments haven't killed journalists. They have. Russians have in Ukraine. Many other governments have done awful things, absolutely, in other war zones, in the present day, in the 20th century, of course. But this is an unprecedented number of journalists who have been killed from a range of outlets. Some of them are from Al Jazeera, some of them are from other outlets. There's been no international journalists allowed into Gaza at all in the last 15 months. There's only one foreign journalist, and I'm aware, that has gone in there on her own. She was from CNN. And there have been some embedded journalists that have gone with the Israeli military. So, yes, I guess some journalists have gone in, but no one's gone in on their own because Israel's not allowing it, and that hasn't changed. So the fact that so many Palestinian journalists have been killed, targeted, droned for doing their job, and it's very clear in many, many of those cases that's been documented by countless human rights organisations, including Israel and Palestine, and Amnesty and Human Rights Watch and the UN, that they're targeted because they're seen by Israel as a threat. Because there are no international journalists in Gaza, they're the ones, the eyes and the ears. They are telling us what's going on. They're showing us either through news stories on TV or online or social media, whatever it may be. And they're therefore a threat because the narrative that Israel wants to sell is that somehow this is a war against Hamas and to go after terrorists, but actually it's a war on the Palestinian people, which is so obvious to anyone who looks at this honestly. The fact that there's been, we don't even know the death tolls, 50,000, 60,000 Palestinians killed at least. So the war on journalists worries me, and it should worry anyone who's looking to the future for other conflicts, wherever they may be, and they inevitably will happen, that the precedent here is that Israel can essentially get away with murder, which they have for, frankly, over half a century, but they've gotten away with it in this war in Gaza. If no one is ever held to account, if there's never any accountability, transparency, trials, etc., other states will look at that and go, huh, I could do exactly the same thing. And Israel claims to be a democracy, the only democracy in the Middle East, which was always, frankly, BS. If you're a Jew, perhaps, but if you're not, it's absolutely dictatorship, especially in the West Bank or Gaza, but also in parts of Israel. So the war on journalism is really, really concerning, and it worries me amongst many of my colleagues. Just finally on this point, though, what has angered me deeply is how few or too few journalists in the West have spoken out about this. Some have, absolutely some have, but not enough have. And I can't help but think that the reason that that is happening, that silence, is that they are simply accepting the Israeli line, which is, well, we're just killing terrorists. They say they're journalists, these people, but actually they're Hamas members. And in every case where that's been alleged, there's been literally no evidence that's credible to back that up. So I worry that if Russia kills a journalist in Ukraine, which has happened, that should be condemned unequivocally and people should be held to account. But there's far more outrage around something like that than there is when Israel kills far more journalists in Gaza.
And I mean, is it also that the precedent that's been set locally, I mean, with the ABC's sacking of Antoinette Latouf? Is it that people or journalists are scared of those lobby groups and even community-based Zionist groups that are out there to deplatform or attack people's livelihoods?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that's been clear even before the Antoinette Latouf case, and that started in the last week, I'm sure many listeners have been following it, it's been covered pretty extensively in a lot of the press, is that she was essentially targeted by pro-Israel zealots who hated the fact that a woman who, yes, had expressed sympathy for Palestinians, but not in any kind of bigoted way, simply she was worried, correctly and justifiably, that Israel was committing mass slaughter in Gaza. She was on the ABC initially in December 2023, so a few months after the start of this current war. And the fact that pro-Israel lobbyists are able to bombard senior members of the ABC, including the heads of the ABC, managing director and Ida Butrose, who was then the head of the ABC, and they essentially buckled. There's no other way to put it. And what came out in the trial last week is really a damning indictment on how ABC management, A, has literally no idea about what's happening in that conflict in the Middle East, which is pretty worrying for a news organization. When you have the top leadership essentially giving an indication that they're setting a tone of not just ignorance but fear. Just one small example, David Anderson, who is the departing managing director of the ABC, was asked a question, and I'm paraphrasing here, something like Antoinette Latouf had referred to the occupation of Palestine, which is a statement of fact. And he was asked, is that anti-Semitic? Just to say that there's an occupation, he said, yes, that could be anti-Semitic. To say an occupation exists is potentially anti-Semitic. Now, that's the level of, what else can you call it, but ignorance, delusion. I don't know David Anderson, so I can only presume what goes on in his head. But that kind of attitude, which I'm not saying all ABC journalists have that view, they don't, but when you set the tone like that from on top, and I know a lot of journalists at ABC who have found the last 15 months especially really challenging to report honestly about what is actually going on. So absolutely, the ABC, and there are some good journalists there doing good work. I don't want to smear all the ABC with the
no, of course, but
management.
If
there are some good journos there, very good journos, but it sets a really, really ugly tone. And that fear, by the way, is only going to get worse, in my view, if Peter Dutton wins the election this year.
Well, on that point, with bipartisan support for Israel, and I mean, Albo's like almost outline of an opinion that isn't really an opinion that he has continuously, how does that look coming into the election? I mean, in America, there was big voting blocks shifted to Trump in an effort, or didn't vote at all in an effort to try and change the situation. We don't even have access to that, or does that, what do you reckon? Does that look like voting for the Greens or more Teals, or how do you see that playing out?
Let me preface my answer by saying I'm not a member of any political party. I don't think journalists should be members of any political party. So I just put that on, just put that up front. But look, there's no doubt that the Labor Party in general, in the last years, I mean, frankly, before October 7, but certainly since, has been unbelievably weak, and that's being very polite. There's been some sort of quasi-condemnation here and there of certain Israeli tactics, but so blatantly obvious that when Russia invaded Ukraine 3 or so years ago, within a matter of minutes, they were talking about sanctions on Russia. Well, we're still waiting for the Australian government to put sanctions on anyone in the Israeli government, let alone the military. I mean, it simply doesn't exist. There's still military-to-military exchanges. I think Dutton and the coalition are, though, more extreme. This is no defence of Labor by any means, but I think they've really tried to weaponise the real situation with anti-Semitism. There is anti-Semitism in Australia, as there is Islamophobia, of course, but there is anti-Semitism. I think people often conflate criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism. For example, if you say, you know, if you firebomb a synagogue, I don't see how that's not anti-Semitism. It pretty obviously is, whoever's doing it. If you put on a wall, you know, F Israel, I don't see that necessarily as anti-Semitic at all. It depends on the context and what else is going on. But there is this conflation between anything that is somehow critical of Israel, therefore, is akin to, you know, 1933 Berlin. I mean, it's insane. And I think that weaponization of anti-Semitism and essentially the many elements of the establishment Jewish community, the Israel lobby, have very much aligned themselves with a Dutton coalition and, frankly, are very excited about the possibility of a change in government. Because I think what you'll find here is sort of what I fear is going to start happening under Trump, which is an attempt to almost criminalize elements of honest, legitimate debate over Israel-Palestine, that somehow even expressing support for Palestinian self-determination is deemed inappropriate, anti-Semitic. And yes, the Greens, I think, have been overall very solid on this in the last 15 months. They've been principled, in my view. Again, I'm not a member of the party, but I think they've been principled on this issue. There's going to be a massive disinformation campaign against the Greens by various conservative forces, particularly around this issue, by a group called Advance Australia, which are sort of a motley group of thugs who were very influential in the Voice referendum falling over, you know, 15 months ago. So I think it's going to be an ugly election. And just finally, I think in general, foreign affairs doesn't really get a look in Australian elections, but I think this election, Israel-Palestine is going to be a factor. I don't think it's going to be a deciding factor for most people. Most people vote on economic issues or the fact that they have cost of living crisis problems, and I think that's obviously legitimate issues to deal with, of course. But I think this is going to be an issue over Palestine and Gaza, and anti-Semitism is going to be weaponized against Labor. And somehow we're going to be told that that Peter Dutton is the best friend of Jews and Israel. And it's just an absurdity. And I say that as someone Jewish. I mean, Peter Dutton has been a bigot from way back and has expressed bigotry against huge amounts of groups for years. And the fact that at the moment he seems to be friendly with certain members of the Jewish community, the most extreme pro-occupation, pro-genocide Jewish community leaders, I think speaks volumes.
Yeah, and I mean, this sort of leads into a twofold. I mean, I think a lot more people will be engaged in a political process now as a result of 15 months of radicalization through seeing their governments in action. But I wanted to ask you, in regards to, you're often, like, whenever you appear on Sky News and sort of conservative news outlets like that, they often... Yeah. Talk down to you and say, oh, well, you're in the minority and how, yeah. And that's not what we hear from people that call us or anything. I wanted to ask, like, in the decades now of experience that you've had from, I mean, I'm sure there's no shortage of death threats that you probably still receive. How have you seen the Jewish community change through this time and through 20 years?
I think it actually has changed, and I think some of it has changed for the better. Let me briefly explain. There's about 110,000, 120,000 Jews in Australia. It's a pretty small population. And the loudest voices that we hear are generally members of the pro-Israel lobby who are, in my view, pro-Israel zealots. They are extremists. They support pretty much everything the Israeli government does. They defend the occupation. I mean, they're almost more Israeli than the Israelis. I mean, it's just embarrassing and shameful in my view. And when I started talking about this issue, well, I started talking about it in 2003, it's sort of showing my age. And what I was saying at the time was actually unbelievably mild. I mean, it was actually a bit different to what I'm saying now. It was, yes, I was against the occupation, but I still said then I support Israel as a Jewish state, none of which I believe anymore. But at the time, what I was arguing for in 2003 was literally government policy, two-state solution. I'm just against the occupation. I mean, you'd think that the sky had fallen in with a kind of insane response by members of the Jewish community here and overseas. You fast forward to now, and I think what's happening in Australia slowly but surely is sort of following what's happening in the US. And what I mean by that is that in the last sort of 10 or so years in America, and again, this is obviously long before October 7, there's sort of a civil war going on, really, in the Jewish community. And what I mean by that is there is a growing divide between not it's not quite as neat as this, but for argument's sake, I'll say this. Many, many younger Jews are disillusioned, angered by Israeli actions, profoundly so, and will not, you know, go in pro-Israel marches or go to pro-Israel synagogues, whereas their parents, grandparents, and the main Jewish spokespeople are madly pro-Israel, akin to here. And in poll after poll after poll in the US, you find many, many Jews, to be younger Jews, 18 to 35, expressing far more critical views against the occupation, sometimes calling what Israel's doing genocide in Gaza. The Jewish establishment here is petrified that something similar might happen here. And so we're not quite at that stage yet, but I do see, I'm involved with the Jewish Council of Australia, which is a relatively new organisation made up of young and old Jews who are trying to articulate a less militaristic, more humane, sane view. I've never claimed to speak for the majority of the community. I've never said that. I don't think I do. But there is a sizable minority, and it is growing, who are angry and frustrated. And I get these messages from Jewish people all the time who I don't know, who write to me saying, why are our so-called our community spokespeople so rabid and so racist towards Arabs and Muslims? And that impacts all of us, because actually that leads, in my view, to anti-Semitism, that if the wider community sees Jewish spokespeople making no distinction between Israel and Jews and Zionism and anti-Zionism, then it's a problem. And they therefore say, well, if Israel's committing genocide or committing mass slaughter in Gaza, all Jews are responsible, which of course is absurd, we're not. But the Jewish establishment is making it seem like, or the whole Jewish community is behind Israel 110%, which is deeply wrong and problematic.
Yeah, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I mean, maybe that's something to say, like, the lived memory of, like, people really remembering, like, a devastating event like the Holocaust and this beating of the drum of war of anti-Semitism from like the egging attack in Bondi that then was just a joyride and indeed stuff, to drum up outrage for the younger generations to get involved in. I wanted to ask just finally, like, I mean, in all the work that you've done, from all your reporting to your books that are widely published, and now congratulations on the Al Jazeera documentary, is stunning and people should check it out. I wanted to ask, what do you want to achieve? Like, what is it, what makes you do what you do?
You mean as a, yeah, it's a big question. I mean, the short answer is, look, I've always seen the role of journalists, or good journalists anyway, to be challenging power. It's a bit of a cliche to say it, but I think it's never been more important. And I see some journalists doing that, our colleagues here and overseas who are trying to do that as the business model of journalism is kind of collapsing around us. But unfortunately, so many journalists see their role as being handmaidens to power or endorsing power. This is whether they're doing, you know, Canberra Press Gallery stuff or in Washington or London or wherever it may be. But for me, I mean, a lot of my work over the years has been about Israel-Palestine, but other issues. I've done a lot of work on disaster capitalism and immigration, refugees, the war on drugs. I mean, to me, often it's giving voice to those who haven't got it, to amplify them, to show that independent journalism matters, that you don't have to necessarily just be part of a mainstream news organisation to do important work. And so often I get messages from journalists here and overseas who work in mainstream press, some of them doing important work, but they are completely almost silenced by their institution. And this is not just about Israel-Palestine, but in general, although particularly it's bad on Israel-Palestine. So I guess for me, I think journalism, I've often seen myself as a bomb thrower. Not literally, just to be clear, for all the Asia people listening. But the idea of challenging power, challenging what we think is the right or wrong way. And I wish there were more journalists who were doing that. Again, I'm not saying I'm the only one, because I'm not. But I wish there were more of us. And so, yeah, I guess my message would be, if there are people listening who like that kind of journalism, independent journalism, and they have the financial means to do so, and obviously if you don't, by all means don't. But if you do, it's important that people support those journalists through money. I'm not asking for money for myself. I'm just saying journalists in general, because we all need to make a living, and I think independent journalism takes time and money. Now, the work I've done often takes years to go to places, to report on people, to take risks. And, yeah, so I guess I'd encourage people, if they have the means to do so, to support this kind of work. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. I'm
pleasure.
Sure you
thank
got
you.
About a million other ones to do today, but I appreciate you taking the time to come down at 3CR, Humble 3CR, and do one with us.
No, my pleasure, mate. Thank you so much.
No worries. Bye.
See ya.